Blog Talk Radio.
Defending conservative values and the Constitution of the United States. You're about to be on the Sig Knowledge Show right here on Blog Talk Radio. Welcome back to the Signalis Show right here on Blog Talk Radio and the New Colony Network. Glad to have you with us this evening. We're going to be talking about Articles 4 and 5 of the U.S. Constitution. Now, anybody that listens to my shows know that I'm a big proponent of learning and studying the Constitution of the United States because contrary to what President Obama believes, the Constitution is the law of the United States. Now, in his whole presidency, he's did nothing but usurp, demean, and go around the Constitution of the United States. Well, now he has to deal with the Republican House and Republican Senate. And I wish that they would do their job that they were sent there to do, and that is to stop him and his lawless disregard of the Constitution of the United States. And anybody that listens to my shows know that I'm always saying that the more you listen, the more you study the Constitution, the more appreciation you will have for it. And the more appreciation you will have for the founding fathers of the country and the wisdom that they had when they wrote this magnificent document. In my opinion, it goes far beyond the Magna Carta in England. But I digress. We're going to be talking about Articles 4 and 5. And this is continuing my Constitution series. I know I haven't did it in a while because we've had other subjects come up, other topics that needed to be discussed that were of much more importance, that were much more critical. But we're going to continue with it, and I'm going to be doing two of the articles tonight, Article 4 and Article 5. Article 4 deals with how the states interact with each other. That's what Article 4 does. And Article 5 is a remedy for when there is absolute gridlock in Washington, D.C., when you can't get the Democrats, Republicans, Independents, Libertarians, or whoever the hell else is up there, when you can't get these people to get together to do anything, that's what Article 5 does. Well, this is, you know, this is my Constitution series, and this is the Constitution from the perspective of the average common working man, the average blue-collar worker such as myself. I'm going to try to not to make this sound too boring. I'm going to try to do this in a very informative and very cohesive manner. So the average worker man could understand it because, see, contrary to what the political pundits in Washington, D.C. believe, and in particular this president and his administration and the Democrat Party in general, and most specifically the far left of it, the kook liberals, they believe that the average American is incapable of understanding the Constitution, is incapable of knowing the subtle nuances of the Constitution and what they actually mean. Because, see, liberals, they want the Constitution to constantly evolve to fit whatever political wind is blowing at the time. Now, conservatives, we follow strictly along the Constitution's structure, the way it was written. In other words, we believe that there's very little ambiguity in the Constitution. Liberals believe that it has to be interpreted on a daily basis just to fit their political agenda. So there's a stark contrast between Democrats and Republicans, liberals and conservatives, concerning the Constitution. The makeup of the Supreme Court is a classic example of that. When you've got more conservative justices as opposed to more liberal justices, well, then you'll see the rulings that come down. So let's jump right into it. Let's get into Article 4. And some of this, I know it's going to be sounding like you're going back to school, like you're back in high school now, but it does need to be read to you verbatim, and then we'll get into what these subtle nuances are. Article 4. And Article 4 has four sections to it. You'll hear, you know, articles referred to as article number so-and-so, section number so-and-so, clause number so-and-so. In other words, get to the exact wording, the exact specific spot in a portion of the Constitution that you want to discuss. Okay, Article 4. And Article 4, as I said, this deals with how the states interact with each other. And when I read some of this, it's going to become very clear to you why this is especially pertinent to what's going on in the country today. It's very, very important. And just to let you know, the show is scheduled for 2 hours, but we're probably not going to do 2 hours. We're probably going to get through this, you know, fairly rapidly, unless there are people that want to call in and that want to chime in and give their 2 cents worth with their questions, comments, and concerns concerning the Constitution. So let's get into it. Article 4, Section 1, full faith and credit shall be given in each state to the public acts, records, and judicial proceedings of every other state, and the Congress may by general laws prescribe the manner in which such acts, records, and proceedings shall be proved and the effect thereof. Now, if that sounds familiar to you, it's called the full faith and credit clause. Section 2. The citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of citizens in the several states. Now, don't let the term several states fool you, because when they ratified the Constitution, there was only 13 states. Now there's 50, unlike President Obama, who thinks there's about 56 or 57 of them. No, there's only 50. Also in Section 2. A person charged in any state with treason, felony, or other crime who shall flee from justice and be found in another state shall, on demand of the executive authority of the state from which he fled, be delivered up to be removed to the state having jurisdiction of the crime. The next clause, no person held to service or labor in one state under the laws thereof, escaping into another, shall, in consequence of any law or regulation therein, be discharged from such service or labor, but shall be delivered upon claim of the party to whom such service or labor may be due. Okay, that's the first two sections. Now, if you think about what's going on in the country today, there are some hot ticket items that are going on in the country today. And when we talk about the full faith and credit clause, sections 1 and section 2, where it says full faith and credit shall be given in each state to public act, records, and judicial proceedings, so on and so forth. And then in Section 2, the citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of the citizens in the several states. Now, what brings to mind right there when it says that the citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of citizens in the several states, i.e., what is it, you know, when the citizens of every state are entitled to all the privileges and immunities of all the states? In other words, what you're entitled to, the freedoms that you enjoy, like in the state of Illinois, you're also entitled to in the state of Nevada. What brings to mind, especially today, what is going on today with this? Well, let me throw this out for you. We're going to do a little history here. Concerning sections 1 and 2, of Article 4. Years ago, the subject of interracial marriage was a hot ticket item, and there's no denying that it was controversial. People were very upset about it. You know, they felt very fervent about it, the people that supported it and the people that were opposed it. It was a very emotional issue for a lot of Americans all the way around. And going back to the Jim Crow laws and things like that, interracial marriage was one of those things that directly fell in the purveyance of Article 4 of the Constitution of the United States. Hence, there were some states that allowed interracial marriage, and there were some states that fervently and vehemently opposed it. Well, this was a constitutional argument, and it was eventually settled by the Supreme Court. But let's just look at it for a minute. In 1967, the Supreme Court, and the Chief Justice was Earl Warren, overturned a case called Loving versus Virginia. Now, you may remember that that was a movie made with Timothy Hutton, where you had a white man married to a black woman, and they lived in the state of Virginia. Well, they went out of state and got married, then they came back. And then when they raided the house to come and get him and saw her, he says, wait a minute, that's my wife. He said, we're married. They said, well, not in the state of Virginia, you're not. This was just a classic example of this and why it pertained, you know, to Article 4. So in 67, the Supreme Court of the United States overturned Loving versus Virginia. Now, it should be noted that when we talk about the citizens of every state being entitled to the immunities and privileges of all the other states, it should be noted that, you know, it had to go to the Supreme Court in the interpretation of the Constitution to get this settled. And just saying hello to one of my guests here in the chat room. And anyway, okay, folks, it should be noted that there were a lot of states that didn't come around to this very easy. For example, here in liberal California, they didn't recognize interracial marriage until 1948 in liberal California. And as a point of reference and as a point of historical fact, Alabama was the last state to recognize interracial marriage, and that was in the year 2000. Now, can you believe that? 2000, the turn of the new millennium, is when Alabama finally recognized interracial marriage. So that's one of the things to show how things that happen in the nation actually pertain to Article 4 of the Constitution. And there's a lot of other hot-ticket items that pertain to it, but I'm just going to give you the most notable examples of how that pertain to it. Now, in today, what is the big hot-ticket item concerning the rights of citizens in one state being honored in all the other states? And this is a big point. This is a hot-ticket item and a big point of contention with a lot of people. Gay marriage. This is it. In fact, this is going to go, you know, the Supreme Court is going to land up having to settle this. Okay, I'm going to read sections 1 and 2 to you again. Full faith and credit shall be given in each state to the public acts, records, and judicial proceedings of every other state. And the Congress may by general laws prescribe the manner in which such acts, records, and proceedings shall be proved and the effect thereof. Well, what that means is that the states have to cooperate with each other, you know, like public acts, records, judicial proceedings. Well, public records, marriage licenses, divorces, unless they're sealed, judicial proceedings, in other words, court rulings, warrants, subpoenas, and the Congress may by general laws prescribe the manner in which such acts, records, or proceedings shall be proved and the effect thereof. In other words, now the Congress, the federal government, is throwing in its 2 cents worth in to tell the states how they're going to recognize the acts, records, proceedings, and stuff like that. In other words, how they are supposed to interact with each other on that. And then in Section 2, and then this is the big one, the citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of citizens in the several states. Now, just think of the several states as all of the states. At the time, it was only 13. Now it's 50. So don't let that term several states throw you off. It just means all the states. And I want to say hello to one of my guests here in the chat room. I always like to do that. And I just want to say hello to them. And glad to have you with us, 5251. Glad to have you with us. If they don't have a sign-in name, they get assigned a number. So if it sounds a little impersonal, well, I know it sounds a little funny, but that's how I see them in there, unless they type a name, say, hi, I'm Joe or Bob or something like that. So 5251, if you logged in, just type in your first name so I know who I'm talking to instead of a number there. It's, you know, it's so impersonal just to be talking to a number. But anyway, the gay marriage issue directly has a bearing on Article 4 of the Constitution of the United States. Now, as a matter of record, currently there are 19 states that recognize gay marriage. That being California, Connecticut, Delaware, Hawaii, Illinois, Iowa, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, Minnesota, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, Rhode Island, Vermont, Washington State, and the District of Columbia. They recognize it. And as currently, four states recognize only civil unions. That would be Oregon, Nevada, Colorado, and Wisconsin. However, it should be noted that Oregon does recognize out-of-state marriages. In other words, marriages from any of the other 49 states, regardless of whether it's same-sex or heterosexual marriage. All the others, they either have a constitutional or statutory ban on same-sex marriage, which would mean the other 27 states. So the majority of the states in the United States of America either have a constitutional, a state constitutional, or a statutory ban on same-sex marriage. And as you saw on the show notes, if anybody's looking online where it said, I'm talking about Articles 4 and 5 and how they have a direct bearing on what's going on in the country today. Well, this is an example of it. And the gay marriage issue is a hot ticket item. And it's eventually going to have to be settled by the Supreme Court, just like interracial marriage, just like desegregation of schools. This is a big hot ticket item. And a lot of people don't realize this. And one of the big problems that we have in the country today is that American history and the Constitution is not being taught in the schools on any level. Or let me rephrase, it's not being taught on any significant level as far as a factual basis is concerned. And you can blame this all on liberal academia. And these are the people that couldn't get what they wanted through violence and threats in the 60s and early 70s. So now they're in charge of universities and junior colleges all across the United States. And they're saying, well, damn it, if we couldn't get you there, we're just going to get your kids and we're going to get your grandkids. We're going to corrupt them. They do not teach the Constitution in schools, at least in not any significant, meaningful way. What they do teach is how corrupt America is and how unjust America is, because they don't want the kids to read the Constitution. They don't want them to see the wisdom of the founding fathers when they created and they came up and ratified the Constitution of the United States. And this is very, very important today, because I firmly believe, and it's already been proven, the more you know about the Constitution, the more you will appreciate it. And the liberals are also scared to death of the fact that the more the young people know about the Constitution, the worse this president and his administration and the Democrat Party look. They're scared to death of it. Because as I've said on my shows many times, liberals cannot argue anything on facts. Everything they do is on knee-jerk emotion. And when they can't win an argument on facts, they go to slander, demagoguery, obfuscation, smearing, besmirching, because they can't win the argument on the facts. So now, Article 4, the full faith and credit clause here. The citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of the citizens in the several states. This is the gay marriage issue big time. So what this means is, now, we've got 27 states that either have their own constitution or some type of statutory ban on same-sex marriage. 19 states recognize it. 4 states only recognize civil unions. So you can see what a quagmire and what a hot-ticket item this is and how Article 4 of the Constitution applies to it, because there it is right there. Each state, the citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of citizens in the several states. Now, when they talk about immunities, they're talking about things, you know, that you have protections from. And if you say you have protections on something from, say, the state of Colorado, well, you also have those immunities like in the state of Florida. That's this what it is. And like I said, the Article 4 deals with how the states interact with each other as prescribed by the federal government, you know, i.e. the Constitution of the United States. My caller from the 310, I'm glad to see you in there. You got a little bit late, but we're talking about Article 4, and I'll just recap it for them because this is one of my faithful listeners here, and I have to make sure that they understand what we're talking about here. So one more time, so I hope it's not too boring for everybody. But one more time, Article 4, Section 1, full faith and credit shall be given in each state to the public acts, records, and judicial proceedings of every other state, excuse me, folks. And the Congress may, by general laws, prescribe the manner in which such acts, records, and proceedings shall be proved and the effect thereof. In other words, when they say how they shall be proved, in other words, the federal government is saying this is what constitutes an official act, record, or proceeding. And Section 2, the citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of citizens in the several states. So I've gave you two big hot ticket examples of that. One, the interracial marriage issue that was settled by the Earl Warren Supreme Court in 1967, where they overturned Loving versus the state of Virginia. And, of course, the gay marriage issue. So it falls directly under the bearing of Article 4 of the Constitution, where specifically the citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of the citizens in the several states. That being the argument that the people that say they get married in Massachusetts, a gay couple gets married in Massachusetts, or a lesbian couple, whatever it is, same-sex couple, they're married in Massachusetts, they want to move to the state of Texas. Well, Texas does not recognize same-sex marriage. So in the state of Texas, guess what? You're not married. They do not recognize it. They do not honor it. So you can see why this is a hot ticket item, and it's eventually going to have to be settled by the Supreme Court, much the same that the Earl Warren Supreme Court in 1967 had to settle the interracial marriage issue. So you can see why this has a direct bearing on what's going on in the country today. It is very important that people understand this, because a lot of people believe that the Constitution is an arcane, outdated document, but it's not. The Constitution of the United States is probably the greatest legal document ever written in the history of the world, even better than the British Magna Carta. It is a fascinating document. And to those who appreciate the founding fathers and their wisdom and how our country was formed from the Revolutionary War and who was here, and you're amazed that they came up with this. And Just to reiterate something else to everybody out there listening to this show, whether they're listening live or whether they listen on download at their convenience, we are a country that's based on Judeo-Christian principle. And every one of those founding fathers could recite the Bible to you backwards and forwards, inside and out. Many of them were Freemasons. Now, having said that, it is no wonder that the Constitution clearly reflects those conservative Judeo-Christian values that the people had. Because remember, when the original pilgrims came here to this country, they were escaping religious persecution. They wanted to come somewhere where they could worship Almighty God in the manner that they wanted to worship Him. They did not want to be locked into the Church of England, which today, what is it known as? What, the Anglican? You know, from the term Anglo-Saxon? But you can see now, I'll give you an example of concerning Article 4, Sections 1 and Section 2. Now, there is a clause, okay, there's more to this now. I've gave you the big hot-ticket items concerning Sections 1 and Sections 2 of Article 4. And it should be lifting some eyebrows. And the eyebrow it should be lifting to you is that, you know what, I need to get out a copy of the Constitution and I need to read it for myself. But I'm trying to give it to you in layman's terms as the average blue-collar working man what the Constitution means, what the founding fathers' intent were. So what this means is that they didn't want to have a collection of 13 states, and each one of the states, although each state has sovereignty, they didn't want 13, you know, just completely different ideologies. They wanted to make it to where, you know, because you got to remember, these people lived under the reign of a monarch, a tyrant named King George III. They didn't want to live like that. They didn't want the American people, the people in this new nation, to live like that. They wanted them to be free. They wanted them to enjoy being an American. They wanted their individuality, yes, of course. But they also knew that to be a nation, there has to be a certain amount of cohesiveness. Cohesive means bringing things together for all the low-information voters out there. And that's one of the reasons why they wanted the citizens of every state to be entitled to the privileges of the citizens of all the rest of the states. In other words, you didn't have to be afraid back in those days that if you wanted to travel from the state of North Carolina up to the state of New York, you didn't want to have to be afraid that you're going to have to go through several different sets of laws that were so blatantly different from each other that it just made travel, you know, intolerable. So that's one of the reasons that they did this. Now, also in Section 2, this is something else. When we're talking about how the states relate to each other, a person charged in any state with treason, there's that word, treason, felony or other crime, and remember, treason is the only crime that is specifically delineated in the Constitution of the United States. To the Founding Fathers, it was that much of an offense to commit treason that they specifically called it out by name in the Constitution of the United States. By the way, folks, this is the Acknowledged Show right here on Blog Talk Radio. The number is 646-478-3229. Tell your friends and family about the show. I'd appreciate that. A person charged in any state with treason, felony, or other crime meaning misdemeanors, who shall flee from justice and be found in another state, in other words, you flee from the state of Georgia and now you're caught in the state of Missouri, you're what's called a fugitive now, who shall flee from justice and be found in another state, shall, on demand of the executive authority of the state from which he fled, executive authority, that would be like the governor of the state or the attorney general of that state or the court that has the jurisdiction, be delivered up to be removed to that state having jurisdiction over the crime. In other words, have you heard this term extradition? In other words, somebody commits a crime in the state of New York, and then they find them out there in Las Vegas, Nevada. So the state of New York, the Attorney General of the state of New York, finds out that they're out there in the state of Nevada, or the District Attorney of New York City finds out that they're out there in Nevada. They have the Las Vegas police hold them, and then they request that that person be extradited back to New York to face crime and trial and punishment. So that right there, I just put it into the in the layman's terms, a person charged in any state with a treason or whatever crime it is, and they flee to another state, they shall on demand of the executive authority of the state in which they committed the crime, be delivered up, in other words, extradited, and, well, to be removed to the state having jurisdiction. In other words, they get extradited back to where they came from. And then, no person held to service or labor in one state under the laws thereof, escaping into another, shall, in consequence of any law or regulation therein, be discharged from such service or labor, but shall be delivered up upon claim of the party to whom such service or labor may be due. Now, in my honest opinion, that right there, that clause right there, little bit out of date because, in fact, it's a lot out of date. That basically had to do with indentured servitude and slavery. When we're talking about no person held to service or labor in one state under the laws thereof, escaping into another shall, in consequence of any law or regulation therein, be discharged from such service or labor. In other words, just because you were required to be in this state and then you escape to another state, that doesn't absolve you of your responsibility and your duty. No, you will be extradited back, shall be delivered up on claim of the party to whom such service or labor may be due. So, in other words, that right there, I will admit, that right there is a pretty much outdated portion of the Constitution. It still has some relevance in certain things, but it's in there, it's in Section 2, Article 4 of the Constitution nonetheless. And if I was in Congress or if I was a senator, that would be one of the things that I would bring up that needs to be cleared up. And that's no bad reflection on the Constitution as a whole. It's just one of the things that was left in there. So, folks, glad to have you with us here on the Signal Show on Blog Talk Radio on the New Colony Network, and we're going to take a little break here. And in my continuing effort to really aggravate the liberals out there, who happen to hate things like Christian music and patriotic music and the like, well, we're just going to give them another dose of it right here on the Signalis Show. So we're going to play a little music for you. We will be back in about 3 minutes or so. So sit back and relax, and we'll continue with Article 4. Once again, we're glad to have you with us here on the Signalis Show. Hey, folks, welcome back to the Signalis Show right here on Blog Talk Radio on the New Colony Network. The number is 646-478-3229. Please share that with your family and friends. Onward, Christian Soldiers, classic Christian church song there. And I know the liberals have to be just beside themselves with anger from hearing that. Well, guess what? We're Christian country liberals. Too bad. You're going to start hearing it a lot on my show. Well, as promised, we're going to keep going on with Article 4. We're going to talk about Section 3. And there's four sections to Article 4 of the Constitution. Now we're on Section 3. And I hope this is not too boring for you folks. As I said, I'm trying to give you this interpretation of the Constitution from the viewpoint of the average working man, the average blue-collar working man such as myself. And once again, thank my caller there from the 310. One of my faithful callers there. I'm glad you listened. Section 3, new states may be admitted by the Congress into this union, but no new states shall be formed or erected within the jurisdiction of any other state, nor any state be formed by the junction of two or more states or parts of states without the consent of the legislatures of the states concerned as well of the Congress of the United States. The Congress shall have power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory or other property belonging to the United States, and nothing in this Constitution shall be construed as to prejudice any claims of the United States or of any particular state. Now, why does this section have any bearing on what's going on today? If you may recall, there are two places in the United States that actually want to form their own states. One is up in Northern California and Southern Oregon, which better known as what they call the State of Jefferson. Now, this has been going on since the early 1800s, but here lately it's ramping up. Basically, it's almost all of the northern counties of the state of California and some of the southern counties of the state of Oregon, the State of Jefferson. And this has a direct bearing on Section 3, where it says new states may be admitted by the Congress into the Union, but they can't be without the consent of the legislatures of the states concerned. In other words, with the State of Jefferson, it would have to get approved by the legislatures of the State of California and the State of Oregon, as well as of the Congress. In other words, you just can't take a vote, have a memorandum, and consider yourself a new state. No, there's a process that has to be going on. Now, currently, with the State of Jefferson thing, and it sounds like they got a really good legal argument here. They're saying that the tax money that they pay into Sacramento, California, and all the other rules and regulations of the State of California that they have to abide by, but yet they're not getting any material benefit or protection from the State of California. And also included in the State of Jefferson is some of the counties in the very southernmost portion of the state of Oregon. Now, just to let you know what we're talking about here, how big would this state be? Well, as of the 2010 census, if it was formed today, and based on the 2010 census, population census, it would be about 500,000 people. Its proposed capital would be Eureka, spelled Y-R-E-K-A. The biggest city in the state of Jefferson would be Redding, California, but the biggest metropolitan area, it would include Medford, Oregon. So you can see that this would, you know, it wouldn't just be this big, huge, bulking state with a whole bunch of people, but it would have about 500,000 people. And it would probably be, well, as far as population, it would be the smallest state, but in area, well, it would probably be, I don't know, several times the size of Rhode Island. It'd probably be bigger than Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and Connecticut combined because of its area. And just to, so you can get a mental picture of where this is, it's in the very northern part of California in the Cascades. Mount Shasta would be in the state of Jefferson, and Mount Shasta is a huge, huge skiing resort. A lot of tourists go there. Lots of tourists go to the Cascade regions. The Cascades are actually mountain chains. They go mountain chain that goes from Northern California up to Oregon, into Washington, into Canada, into British Columbia, and the volcanic. So that's just to give you a mental picture of what this is. So that's Section 3 pertains to that. And you may also recall that there are some counties up in the northern corner of the state of Colorado that want to break off and become their own state. Well, guess what? Here we go. It's going to directly fall under the purveyance of Section 3 of Article 4 of the Constitution of the United States here. So this is why this is important. There is actually a procedure here in the Constitution for this to happen, but you got to have consent of the legislatures of the state or states involved, as well as the Congress of the United States, because now, if you remember, that every state in the union has two senators, regardless of your population, U.S. senators, the Senate being the upper house of the legislature of the federal government, the House of Representatives being the lower half, the lower house. And that came from the good old days of the Roman Empire where you had the Roman Senate. So there's two very familiar items that give credence and validity and usability of Article 4 of the Constitution of the United States, which is contrary to what the liberals believe, that the Constitution is irrelevant now. No, it is very much relevant now. So now we're going to go on to Section 4 of Article 4. The United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion and on application of the legislature or of the executive when the legislature cannot be convened against domestic violence. So now what does that mean for the average working guy? Well, the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government. In other words, a republic. We are what's called a constitutional republic. In other words, we have elected officials to speak on our behalf. So the Congress of the United States, the federal government, is guaranteeing to each state, per the Constitution, Article 4, Section 4, that each state will be allowed to have its own republican form of government in its state. In other words, elected officials to speak on behalf of the people. In other words, the federal government is not going to appoint a viceroy or governor that answers directly to the federal government to rule that state. No. Each one of the states is going to have a republican form of government, just as the country as a whole elects congressmen and senators to the federal government to speak on their behalf. So that's one of the meanings. And shall protect each of them against invasion. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Now, what is the big hot ticket item today when we talk about that? And shall protect each of them against invasion. Well, the first thing that comes to mind is the illegal immigration issue. And here it is in black and white, straight from the Constitution of the United States, and shall protect each of them against invasion. Shall protect each of them against invasion, not might or could protect them against invasion. No, it says shall. In other words, the federal government has the duty to protect the states against invasion. There are many people that believe that the influx of illegal immigration is tantamount to an invasion of our country. Now, obviously, it obviously means that, you know, if there was a foreign military body or something trying to get into our borders, obviously it means that, but it could be expanded. Now, the liberals, they want to expand and reinterpret the Constitution on a daily basis just to meet their political needs. And obviously, they're not going to like what I just said. They're going to say, well, that's not invasion. Well, you know what? You want to construe and contort and stretch the Constitution on a daily basis just to meet your political needs. So why is it so far out of the realm that illegal immigration is tantamount to an invasion of our country? Because contrary to what anybody believes, if you come into this country illegally, that is in and of itself a criminal act. You commit a criminal act, guess what that makes you? A criminal. Obviously, it's not like being a mass murderer or a terrorist, but it is a criminal act. In point of fact, it's a misdemeanor. But a lot of people consider the illegal immigration influx and the problem that we have, especially in the western United States and southwestern United States, they consider it tantamount to an invasion. And here we have, right there, straight out of the Constitution, shall protect each of them against invasion. And then, on application of the legislature or of the executive branch, which is the president, when the legislature cannot be convened, against domestic violence. Okay, what is domestic violence? Well, that would be a state of civil unrest, riots, like happened in Ferguson, Missouri, or what happened out here in the early 90s in Los Angeles with the Rodney King riots. Domestic violence also means homegrown terrorism. And like I said, I'm just giving to you this, all of this, from the viewpoint of the average blue-collar working man. Just trying to explain it as best I can and relate it to my fellow Americans, the majority of which are just like me, went through high school, maybe some college, grew up with a love of God and country, and a lot of times you just don't have the time to sit down and study the Constitution the way you would like to. But that's one of the advantages of having things like Blog Talk Radio and other internet radio sites and forums like this, where we can sit and talk about things, or where you can sit and listen and hear the discussions back and forth, both pro and con. That's why it's called a dialogue. And that's why I do not cut anybody off when they call into my show. They may vehemently oppose everything I say, but they're welcome to call in, because we're not like the liberal media outlets where they only want people on their show that happen to toe their party line. or that happen to agree right down the line with their socialist ideology. No, that's not what talk radio is about. Talk radio is just what it is, talk radio. You talk about it. Sometimes the best thing you can do is agree to disagree. You're not going to agree on everything. That's a given. In fact, you're going to find out in life you're going to disagree on more things than you agree on. But such is being human. Such is life. So now, there's Article 4. We've just went through Article 4. And just to recap it, Section 1 and 2, we talked about the interracial marriage issue. We talked about the gay rights, same-sex marriage issue. In Section 3, we talked about how if these counties or two states wanted to come together to form one big state or whatever the case may be, that there is a process that has to be gone through per the Constitution of the United States. It's not impossible, not probable, but it's not impossible. There is a remedy for this. So, there it is right there. We just went through Article 4 of the Constitution of the United States, and I hope it broke Article 4 down to a point to where everybody can clearly understand it now, that they have a better understanding of what's being said. So, there we have it right there. So now we're going to go into Article 5 of the Constitution. And this is the article that should really have everybody's attention. It really should have everybody's attention because we all know what is going on in the country today, especially since President Obama has been in office. Well, his first 2 years, he had a Democrat Senate and a Democrat House, didn't get anything done. Then, when they saw they were going to lose the House, that's when they shoved Obamacare down our throat, destroyed one-sixth or one-seventh of the U.S. economy. And now everything that has to do with health care has to go on federal guidelines. They have destroyed the health care system in this country. Now, that's the subject of another show that's already been discussed, litigated, debated. There's no point in going into the details of Obamacare, because we all know what it is. We all know what the implications to every man, woman, and child are. So we won't even go into that. But are remedies in the Constitution for when the gridlock is so bad in Washington, D.C., and when you can't get Republicans and Democrats, conservatives and liberals and libertarians and independents, when you can't get anybody to get together to agree on anything for the good of the country? And remember, the United States, the most of the Constitution delineates what the federal government cannot do, because people have rights. The federal government or any other state government has what's called enumerated power, that being the power that the people allow them to have, and power that can be revoked through a Republican form of government. If there's something in Washington you want changed, some law you want changed, you have to elect officials that are willing to go there and fight for that change. There's the idea that we're called a democracy. We elect our representatives by democratic vote, in other words, majority rule. But we're actually a representative constitutional republic. We have elected officials to speak on our behalf. Now, the remedy for that is, if those officials don't do their job to our satisfaction, there's something called vote them out of office whenever they're up for re-election. But to make that informed, intelligent choice, you have to pay attention and keep up with what's going on. How many times have I said on my show, you have to find out what your government is doing behind your back and what they are doing in your name? If you don't like what they're doing, you let your elected officials know that if they continue upon that course, they're going to be unemployed the next time they come up for re-election. And we all know that those pundits and those career politicians in Washington, D.C., and many of the state capitals around the United States, well, quite frankly, if they weren't in politics, if they weren't in some type of government situation or government job, well, they wouldn't know what to do with themselves. It's sad, but true. Very sad, but true. But that's the reality, and that's the form of government that we live in. And remember, you get the government that you deserve. President Obama was elected in 2008, then he was reelected in 2012. Well, if you were really pissed off between 2008 and 2012, and you didn't vote to go vote against him in 2012, then you can't complain. In fact, if you don't vote, you can't complain about anything the federal government does. If you don't vote in your state and local elections, you can't complain about what the state or county or city does. Now, if you vote, you can complain because you made your voice known. And I want to say hello to my guest there in the room. Hello, 6444. How you doing there? Glad you joined the show there. Really glad. If you want, just post your first name so I know who I'm talking to there. Because talking to a number is so impersonal. But if not, anyway, glad to have you on the show. Hope you're enjoying it. So now, we're going to be getting into Article 5. What can the states and the people do? What can we do when things are so locked up, gridlocked in Washington, D.C., that they are not doing the job that they were elected to do? And that is to do things for the benefit and general welfare of the American people. That's why they were sent to Washington, D.C. They're not up there just to go to cocktail parties, play golf, go on junkets, or whatever the hell else it is that they do. They were sent there to do a job, a specific job, in relation to their constituents. And for the low-information voters out there, constituents means the people that they represent. And whether it's a House district or being a senator, which be like representing half a state, but they actually, each senator from each state actually represents everybody in that state. So, Article 5. This is when the people and the states, which are sovereign now, each state has sovereignty, just like the federal government has sovereignty, just like we are a sovereign nation. But there is something that can be done about this. I'm going to read to you Article 5 verbatim, and then we'll go from there. Article 5 from the Constitution of these here United States of America says following, quote, "The Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution, or on the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states," don't let the several states thing fool you, because there was 13 then, now there's 50, "shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which in either case shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of this Constitution, when ratified by the legislatures of three-fourths of the several states, or by conventions in three-fourths thereof, as the one or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress, provided that no amendment which may be made prior to the year 1888, that's 1888, and 8, shall in any manner affect the first and fourth clauses in the ninth section of the first article of the Constitution, and that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate." Now, I know that sounded like a lot of legalese there, and it sounded kind of technical, but remember, when this was written, these were written by the Founding Fathers. The vernacular that they used back then was different. They still used a very proper form of English, not like the colloquial American English we speak today. They were still had the hangovers of the old English system. Okay, for example, we still have leftovers of the old English system, our monetary system, dollars, cents. You know, we break them down into quarters, dimes, nickels, pennies. Our units of measurement, gallons, ounces, quarts, pints, half pint, inches, quarter inches, eighth inches, three quarters of an inch, yards, miles, instead of like meters and kilometers, which they use over there, which is the metric system. No, what we actually are using here is remnants of the old English system. And you've also heard the term common laws. That is a remnant of the old English common laws. So there's still remnants of England still in our laws. But they're kind of, you know, it's esoteric, you know, it's real subtle. You have to actually get into them to understand that you're actually in it. So now that was Article 5 verbatim. And I know, as I said, I know it sounded kind of technical to you, but we're gonna dissect it line by line here and why this is very critical to what's going on in the country today. So, folks, by the way, Signalis Show right here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm on every Tuesday evening, except if something happens or technical difficulty, by my scheduled time is every Tuesday evening from 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. That would be 9 to 11 over there on the East Coast. And all you folks in between Mountain Time and Central Time, well, you extrapolate the time for the time difference. So just want to make sure and please tell your friends and family about the show. And, folks, it should be noted that neither I nor any other Blog Talk host, and especially our New Colony, we don't get any money for this. We do this out of the goodness of our heart because we feel an obligation and a duty to speak to our fellow Americans, regardless of political affiliation, race, creed, religion, to tell them what the truth is and to counter this movement that's going on in the country today, this liberal socialist movement, to literally tear apart the fabric and the foundations of what this country was built on. And Article 5 is a remedy for when things in Washington are so bad and they are not working for the people. So now, Article 5, first line here. The Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution. Two-thirds of both houses. That means to put an amendment to the Constitution, it has to be ratified by two-thirds of both houses of the Congress. In other words, two-thirds of the House of Representatives and two-thirds of the Senate. So you do the math. The Senate, it'd be 67. And let's see, two-thirds of the 435, let's see, what would that be? Let's calculate that right here real quick. What would two-thirds of 435 be? That would be, well, let's just see. Just bear with me, folks. That would be 292 congressmen would have to sign off on an amendment. So now you could see it would seem that it would be a lot easier to get in the Senate since we're talking about 66-67 as opposed to 292. But it was did that way by the Founding Fathers for one very specific reason and a very good reason. Because if two-thirds, that would be a supermajority, if two-thirds of the elected officials agreed that this amendment should go through, then it obviously represents the supermajority of the American people that this amendment either needs to be repealed or it needs to be put in place into the Constitution. So you can see that the Founding Fathers wanted this to be good. In other words, they wanted it for there to be no ambiguity in the vote for an amendment to the Constitution. So, and as I said, I'm giving it to you from the perspective of the average blue-collar working man. I'm not giving it to you in the perspective of some high-priced, law professor or some high-priced criminal defense attorney or some district attorney or something like that. No, this is just from the understanding of the average working man here in the United States, people like us, regardless of your race, ethnicity, religion, political affiliation. Because when it comes to this, we're all in the same boat. So that's what that first line meant. Okay, two-thirds. So you could see that if you could get two-thirds of the House and two-thirds of the Senate to agree that this needs to be done, well, then it gets done. It also means that if, in theory, if you get the House and Senate to pass that, it's veto-proof. Now think about that. It would be veto-proof because if those same two-thirds of both houses, president vetoes it, fine, it goes back, fine, they just override the veto. it goes into law anyway, regardless of what that president in office happened to think at the time. So that's the first clause. Folks, we're going to go to another little break here. And in my continuing effort to aggravate the liberals, you're going to hear a very familiar voice here. One of the greatest Americans to ever live. Not only was he one of the greatest movie stars to ever live, he was a hero to a lot of men and women in this country. He was an American, and in fact, there's a plaque to him inside of the Jefferson Memorial in Washington, D.C. So we're going to be back in about 2.5-3 minutes, so sit back and relax. Let's acknowledge you right on Blog Talk Radio on the Colony Network. We'll be back in just a little bit.
You ask me why I love her? Well, give me time. I'll explain. Have you seen a Kansas sunset or an Arizona rain? Have you drifted on a bayou down Louisiana way? Have you watched the cold fog drifting over San Francisco Bay? Have you heard a Bob White calling in the Carolina Pines? Or heard the bellow of a diesel in the Appalachia Mines? Does the call of the Niagara thrill you when you hear her waters roar? Look with awe and wonder at her Massachusetts shore, where men who braved a hard new world first stepped on Plymouth Rock. Do you think of them when you stroll along a New York City dock? Have you seen a snowflake drifting in the Rockies way up high? Have you seen the sun come blazing down from the bright Nevada sky? Do you hail to the Columbia as you rush into the sea? Or bow your head at Gettysburg? Or struggle to be free? Have you seen the mighty Teton? Or watched an eagle soar? Have you seen the Mississippi roll along Missouri's shore? Have you felt a chill at Michigan when on a winter's day her waters rage along the shore in thunderous display? Does the word aloha make you warm? Do you stare in disbelief when you see the surf come roaring in at Waimea Reef? From Alaska's cold to the Everglades, from the Rio Grande to Maine, my heart cries out, my pulse runs fast, the mice for the name. You ask me why I love her? I have a million reasons why. My beautiful America, beneath God's wide, wide sky.
We're back on the Signalis Show right here on Blog Talk Radio on the New Colony Network. I want to welcome our caller from the 423. I believe that's the state of Tennessee area code. I may be mistaken, but anyway, we're glad to have you on the show, and we're glad you're listening. You got in late. We're on Article 5 of the Constitution right now and talking about the remedy when Washington just absolutely does not work. And if you didn't recognize that voice, that was the Duke, John Wayne, talking about why he loves America. Told you it was somebody that you're going to like. And the caller from the 423 has a question. So let's bring him on the show here. Hey, you're on with Signalis.
Good evening. This is Mama Bear.
Well, hello, Mama Bear. You still over there? What are you still over in, what, Chattanooga?
No, we're up around Sulphur Springs. Johnson City,
well,
Bristol,
just...
Tri-Cities.
Well, Mama Bear, I haven't talked to you in a while. I was getting a little worried about you. Yeah, you over there in the eastern part of Tennessee, like around Brock, Bristol, and all
that?
The
very tip.
Yeah, oh, you over there like where?
Not
Virginia,
too far
North
from
Carolina?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, the only reason why I asked that is because when I was a little kid, we lived in Texas, and we used to drive to West Virginia to see my relatives over there, and we'd have to drive the whole length of Tennessee from Memphis over to Knoxville, and then 40 goes down to North Carolina, and 81 keeps going up to, you know, goes into Virginia and all of that. So,
I think that's
by Knoxville,
well, no, that takes us to where we're at.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, because you used to go out of Knoxville, then you go past that, and 40 goes south into North Carolina, then 81 keeps going east up into Virginia, like going to Bristol and Abingdon, Virginia, and all of that. So anyway, well, how have you been doing? Have you talked to Sergeant Dyer?
I talked to him the other day. Now that his case has been reversed and remanded back to the district court, for failure to look.
Are you telling me that they have kicked this back to the court? In other words, the appellate court sent it back to the court and says, you guys screwed up.
That's it. According
that is wonderful.
Blah, blah, blah.
That
and blah, blah, blah. You can't do this because you have to look at the evidence. And since they refused to accept the evidence, when I presented the brief, they have sent it back and remanded, and overturned and remanded the denial of the denial of his post-conviction relief that they did, and the evidentiary hearing denial. Today, the court called and the evidence was taken to them in person, handed to the new judge in person, who said, I'm not sure how long it will take, but I will go through the evidence.
Mama Bear, this is fantastic news. You don't know how happy I am to hear this. Folks, in case you don't know who this is Mrs. Jan Dyer. This is the mother of Sergeant Charles Dyer, a Marine that's in jail in Oklahoma for some trumped-up charges and is probably one of the greatest cases of prosecutorial misconduct I've ever seen. And by the way, Sergeant Charles Dyer is a man that served two tours of duty as a United States Marine defending our liberty and our freedom. Just want everybody to know that.
Well,
so anyway,
he is now working at it. He's getting ready in case they allow him to have an evidentiary hearing, which they still don't have to do. They have three choices. Go ahead and summarily dismiss it again, or give him an evidentiary hearing and make a decision after that time, or release him. They have those three choices.
Well, I can see. Well, you know what? They're under pressure now because and has this gone public about the appellate court kicking it back?
Yes.
Okay, well, then they're going to be under a lot of political pressure now. They can't just summarily dismiss it because a higher court has basically told them, you screwed up.
Mm-hmm. I'm telling you.
I mean, that's like the.
And they have quoted the statute of the Oklahoma Court of Criminal Appeals to them and the Oklahoma statutes because I wrote a letter that I had notarized at Charles's request, which he sent along with his request for the appeal hearing. And it said, I took the post-conviction relief brief and evidence to the courthouse. I was asked to wait because there were two volumes of evidence, including CDs and a hard drive, and waited about 30 minutes. Finally, the little court clerk comes back from the judge's chambers and says, the judge says he will accept the post-conviction relief brief, but hold on to the evidence for the evidentiary hearing and refuse to file it. There never was an evidentiary hearing. They denied it, summarily dismissed the case, denying his appeal, and the Oklahoma Court of Criminal Appeals says they can put anything into evidence at their discretion. You cannot refuse to accept evidence of any kind. And gave
so
the statute.
Basically what we have happened here is that the Court of Criminal Appeals has basically taken this court, pulled their pants down, and swatted them.
And we have
put
a new
it in
judge. The judge that
this
did
new
that
judge.
Is not in office any longer. We have a new judge who actually came out, took the evidence,
mm-hmm.
and shook the hand of the person that delivered it. I will go through it all. I don't know how long it will take me.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what I am going to do. I'm going to let my friend Wolfpack over in Haywire Gulch, I'm going to let him know about the good news. And are you going to still be over there in Tennessee next week?
More than likely, as far as I know right now.
Well, what I was going to say is that if you could call into the show next week, I'll simulcast you. With him over there in Haywire, because I'm sure he would love to hear this news too. Him and his
okay.
listeners, they would love to hear this. This is fantastic news, Mrs. Dyer. I know it's not a slam dunk.
It's not something that is definite at this point. We don't want to get our wings on too fast. We've got to stay grounded because
mm-hmm.
we don't know what they're going to do, but it's a start. The paperwork delivered to the court yesterday. They asked for the evidence today.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's still the best news I've heard in a long time.
Mm-hmm. It still gives us a little glimmer of hope.
Well, I mean, and I'm especially, I mean, you know, because, you know, you're in this fight 24 hours a day with your son, and I'm glad that this, as you say, the glimmer of hope is with you, too.
God has been
I can only
going ahead of us. Yeah, he's been having quite a time.
Well, the good news is that, you know, Sergeant Dyer, being a Marine, he has a work ethic, he has discipline, and he has faith. And those are all qualities of what's called a good man.
Well, I got to tell him the good news.
Mm-hmm.
And then I handed the phone to his sister. And as I did, he had turned around and told the other guys that were standing around him what I had just read to him. And she says, "Oh, my God." I said, "What?" She says, "They're all screaming in the background."
The oh, Lord.
The guys with him, no. They've seen. So,
well, there was some camaraderie there. I mean, they were happy for him.
Oh, yeah. And he has already helped three guys, which
well, see,
I am impressed.
That's another quality. That he's not a selfish man. He's making the best of his situation, and he's doing what he can for himself, and he's out there helping everybody, helping other people that can't help themselves. See, that's part of that discipline of being a soldier and a United States Marine.
Well, he's gotten
so
two
all that training
is reduced and an evidentiary hearing for a third person so far.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
so
he's doing what he can. I mean, he's doing what he can.
He is. He says
that's
he
more,
needs
that's
to
more
help everybody that he can.
Yeah. Well, that's more than these people are getting from other people. At least Charles is trying to help them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he says anything I can do, I will do.
Yeah.
It may not work, but I will do my best.
Okay. Well, Mama
so
Bear,
I
am glad you called in. Yeah.
Well, you guys have a good evening, and I'm trying to take care of his dad, who is not doing the best in the world, so I don't stay on the phone for very long.
Oh, no, of course not. No, he has to come first. But, Mama Bear, we love you, and we thank you for calling in and giving us that update, okay?
Well, you betcha. And we will talk to you guys later on. All right.
Okay, Mama Bear.
You have
Alrighty,
a good night.
God bless. Semper
you too.
Fi.
Semper Fi to you, too. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thank you, folks, for being patient there and listening. That was Jan Dyer, the mother of Sergeant Charles Dyer. He's a Marine that's in jail in Oklahoma for was probably one of the worst cases of prosecutorial misconduct I've ever seen. He's in jail because he had the audacity and the honor to speak up against what the federal government is doing behind our back. He's a patriot, and the man needs our help, and that was some good news. Well, getting back to what we were doing on Article 5, we talked about, you know, the two-thirds needed by both houses of Congress to amend the Constitution, or on the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of the states shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which in either case shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of the Constitution. When two-thirds of the states, on application of two-thirds of the states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which in either case shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of the Constitution. So in other words, if two-thirds of the states decide to get together and have a convention that they are going to amend the Constitution, there's nothing the federal government can do to stop it. Two-thirds of the state, that'd be 34 states. If 34 states are determined to get together like, you know what, we're sick of this, we're tired of this crap, we want a constitutional amendment that says they have to have a balanced budget in Washington, D.C., or they have to have an amendment for this, or they can get together and say, we want an amendment that's actually going to repeal another amendment. Two-thirds of the states call a convention and decide they're going to get together and do this by the book. There's nothing the federal government can do to stop it. In other words, if you lackeys up there in Washington, D.C., regardless of which political party you're in, if you people can't get together and get something done for the American people, well, then, damn it, the states and the people are going to get it done, because this is our country. We are America. And contrary to what Washington, D.C., whether it's the House, the Senate, or the President of the United States and his administration, regardless of what they think of themselves, we are the government. We're the ones that have the final yay, nay on what goes on in the country. You don't do what we want. You displease us. We vote you out of office and replace you. That's what a constitutional republic is. Yes, it is a great honor to serve your country in that capacity. But if you don't do your job, it is also the right and responsibility of the people to remove them from their post if they're not doing their job to our satisfaction. So that was the other next that line in there. Shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of this Constitution when ratified by the legislatures of three-fourths of the states or by conventions of three-fourths thereof, as one or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress, provided that no amendment which may be made prior to the year 1888 shall in any manner affect the first and fourth clauses in the ninth section of Article 1, and that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. Okay, that sounded like a lot of legalese. I'm going to break it down for you, tell you what it says. If the two-thirds of the states have a convention to propose this amendment, and then if three-fourths of the state legislatures ratify it, guess what? It goes into law. There's nothing the people in Washington, D.C. can do about it. Three-fourths would be 38 states. There's nothing they can do about it. Provided that this amendment now, here's the proviso that the founding fathers put in there. It cannot affect the first and fourth clauses in the ninth section of Article 1. Now, you're thinking, well, Sig, exactly what the hell is that? Good question. I'm going to tell it to you real quickly. In Article 1, Section 9, Clauses 1 and 4, Clause 1 deals with the collecting of taxes, laying taxes, levying taxes, providing for the common defense, general welfare, and such. In other words, the states can't get together and say, we want an amendment to where the federal government has no more control over collecting taxes, levying taxes, duties and stuff, providing for the common defense, that being the military, and the general welfare of the country. And Clause 4 deals with the uniform rules of naturalization, in other words, making somebody an American, and dealing with things like bankruptcies. Now, why is bankruptcy in that? Well, because bankruptcy is a federal issue. That's a state issue. When somebody declares bankruptcy, that is a federal issue. And why is it a federal issue? Because it has a direct bearing on your taxes or lack thereof that you're going to pay if you declare bankruptcy. So, in other words, the amendment that can be proposed by two-thirds of the states and ratified by three-fourths of the state legislatures cannot be in conflict with Clauses 1 and 4 of Section 9 of Article 1 of the Constitution. So I just broke it down to you there as pertaining, you know, from the average blue-collar working guy. So, in other words, the Founding Fathers made sure that the states could not interfere with the federal government's ability to collect and levy taxes, provide for the common defense, and the general welfare of the country. In other words, they knew that the federal government had to have some authority over the states. But as I said many times, and even on this show a couple of times, that most of the Constitution delineates what the federal government cannot do. Because governments, legislatures, stuff like that, they have enumerated powers, that being the powers that the people allow them to have. People have rights like life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, and our Bill of Rights, which is the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, not the Articles. Once we go through the Articles, then we're going to start into the Bill of Rights, you know, like the First Amendment, Second Amendment, Third Amendment, Fourth Amendment, so on and so forth. What we're talking about is the Articles. In other words, the prerequisites in front of the Constitution that delineates certain things. So, in other words, it's like a parliamentary procedure. It's like a rule book, you know, when we're talking about, in, you know, the dealings of the Constitution. So, folks, I'm glad and I hope that you enjoyed this show. And I hope that I made sense of this for you pertaining to Article 4 and Article 5. And one of the big reasons why Article 5 is so important, as I said, is that Washington, it seems that we can't get anything done. So the states, this in there specifically, so the people and the states would have a remedy to get the country going for the good of the country when the people in Washington simply cannot agree on anything, when they cannot get together on anything. And this is one of the most least known things about the Constitution, which is Article 5. And the reason why it's least known is because the Constitution is not being taught in school today. Traditional American history and government is not being taught in the schools today. What you're getting is the liberal version of it. That being, it changes from year to year or month to month, depending on the political climate and the political winds that happen to be blowing that day. The Constitution is what it is. It is the law of the United States. Contrary to what President Obama believes, and contrary to what a lot of the other people in Washington, D.C. believe, and contrary to what a lot of people in the state legislatures believe, the Constitution of the United States is the law of these here United States of America. And that is a fact. It's incontrovertible. And that's one of the reasons why this president hates it so much, because most of that Constitution tells him what he can't do. He has enumerated powers just like the House, the Senate, and the Supreme Court have. They have the powers that we allow them, as the people of America, we allow them to have it. And guess what? Those powers can be revoked at our discretion if we get together and decide to do so. Article 5 deals with exactly that. So don't think that there's nothing that the people can do. I just read it to you straight from the Constitution of the United States. And it's very important that everybody understand that. Now, folks, you can email me at thesignalisshow, all lowercase letters, thesignalisshow@gmail.com. I answer all my emails myself. You don't get a form letter, and nobody answers them for me. I do that myself. You get a personal response from me, Signalis, right here on the Signalis Show. So, folks, I want to thank you for tuning in. We went through this, and I really do want to thank you for tuning in, everybody that listened online, everybody that called in today, anybody that listens on download at their convenience. I want to thank you for taking the time to listen. Please tell your friends and family about the show. We'd be glad to hear from you. And we'd be glad to have you listen in whatever capacity and in whatever mode you decide to listen in. So, folks, we'll be back on next Tuesday with another topic. And not sure yet what that's going to be, but be sure and tune in to the Signalis Show right here on Blog Talk Radio and the New Colony Network. My caller from the 310, I want to thank you for calling in, my faithful listener, and all my listeners there in the chat room. I want to thank you for tuning in live, and anybody that listens to this on download, thank you as well for at least taking the time to listen to the message. Please pass the word on, share it with your friends and family. And so, till next week, God bless you, God bless America.